Hi, I'm Sarah Jackman, and I'm joined today by
Carl Thomas, data reporter for EG.
Philip White, a partner at Malcolm Hollis.
And Chris Sullivan, also a partner at Malcolm Hollis.
Thank you. And we're here today just to take a look at MEES, the Minimum Energy Efficiency Standards, and EPCs. Phil, perhaps I can start with you. Do you want to tell us a little bit about what MEES is and when it comes into force?
Yes, of course. MEES was born out of the Energy Act in 2011 and was formulated in the Energy Efficiency Private Rented Property England and Wales Regulations 2015, which were upgraded and amended in 2016. Essentially, it places an obligation on landlords not to let any premises or make a new letting of a premises from the 1st of April 2018 on both commercial and domestic property where the EPC rating is F or G, otherwise classed as substandard. And then moving on from that, on the domestic front, any property which is currently let with a substandard EPC cannot be continue to be let from the 1st of April 2020, and similarly on the commercial stock from the 1st of April 2023.
So quite a lot to take in there. In terms of how landlords have been preparing, what progress have you seen to date?
We primarily work with the commercial sector, and we've done recently quite a few large portfolios for landlords of with fund assets in funds. Essentially what we're doing for them is looking at their whole asset portfolio and doing desktop reviews to identify at-risk EPCs based on existing EPCs. And we're then doing a bit further investigation by looking at leases, when lease end dates are, and further clarifying the risk register by putting it into a traffic light system. From that, we make an initial report to the client with recommendations for further investigation where we find substandard EPCs are genuinely in existence or there are no EPCs at all. Quite a few properties have slipped through the net and we find that haven't actually got EPCs where they should technically have them. And from that, we can then go to site on those at-risk units and undertake draft EPC assessments to understand what the EPC ratings are as of this date.
In terms of the landlord's response to these regulations, have you found people have been fairly positive and see it as an opportunity, or how are they grasping it?
It very, very much depends on the client you're dealing with. A lot of them see it as another big stick to beat them with. Others are seeing it genuinely as a good opportunity to upgrade their stock. But interestingly, for an assessor who's been around since 2008, it's been a bit of a light bulb moment for me. As of 2015, EPCs have started to be discussed and taken seriously by all clients. They now know that they have to do something rather than just sit on their thumbs and do nothing. So it's been a really positive move from my point of view as an assessor. And likewise, you know, those clients that are genuinely looking at these as a way of improving their stock, it's a great period for them to actually take stock and make the improvements that are required.
There are some exemptions to the regulations. Are you able to talk us through those?
Yes, certainly. There's the 7-year payback rule that if the building doesn't meet, or the improvement works to the building don't meet a 7-year payback rule, the landlord doesn't have to undertake the works. There's a formula that we've got, software that we can program in, and it'll come back with the results for that. If there's a lease of less than 6 months or more than 99 years, then the landlord will not need to comply in that circumstance. If the improvements required will unacceptably alter the character of a listed building, then they don't necessarily need to comply. On that, there is a misconception with listed buildings that they are exempt from EPCs. They're not. They have to be assessed by the landlord and then a decision made once the assessment has been undertaken as to whether they still need to require an EPC and comply with MEES or not.
I think there's one other exception, isn't there, which is with the tenant. This is certainly in terms of the improvement. So if a tenant prohibits the landlord from entering the premises to do any of the improvement works, then it also qualifies for an exemption.
Yes, so there's also the fact that if the works require planning and they can't be passed through planning, and also a higher landlord refuses permission for the tenant to undertake the works if they're looking at a subtenancy agreement.
Yeah. So So there's a number of exemptions there.
Yes, there are.
EPCs now have been in force for 10 years, or the requirement for them. A number of those current EPCs are going to start needing to be renewed soon. There are probably a number of landlords sitting there feeling very comfortable that they've got their E or above. Obviously, EPCs now, the way they're being done is slightly different to how they were originally. What does that mean for landlords potentially? What are the ramifications?
It's an interesting one. But firstly, I think we have to point out that the trigger for an EPC is a new letting or the sale of a building. So if an EPC expires at any time during an existing lease, then there is no need to renew that EPC. So it's only at the trigger point when an EPC is required. And from experience, I'm finding that not all EPCs that were prepared in the early days in 2008 where they're substandard are actually substandard buildings. So landlords don't need to be necessarily afraid of getting an assessment done on their building. They may find, to their surprise, that the building's improved. Over the 10 years, tenancies have moved on, improvements have been made to the building that won't have been recorded in the EPC, better lighting, new HVAC systems are going in. So in some cases, the EPCs will be better than they were when they originally put out there. In other cases, the early EPCs may not have been prepared correctly because defaults were used largely where they didn't know the efficiencies of plant that they were looking at. But now I believe the education of the assessor is much better and they are investigating harder to get a better rating for the landlord and the client. So there's more work going into producing a more accurate EPC now. Mm. So I think genuinely landlords should not fear having a new EPC undertaken. The risk hasn't been taken away entirely. There will be instances where a rating that's an E now could fall into a substandard category of F or G. So, you know, they have to make that decision when they make it and actually, you know, not shy away from it. They've got to do it, so they need to just move on and get it done. Mm.
If I can just add, I think and my recollection, Phil, if I'm right, is that was it around 2012 where the perspective was prior to that, a lot of the EPCs may very well be a bit duff, but since then things have got a little bit better and the accuracy started to improve around then, or was there a change in legislation? Was it building regulation?
I'm sure some of the assessors who were around pre-2012 might challenge you on the fact they were a bit duff, but I do think the education of the assessors in the early days wasn't as well rounded as it is now. The conventions are more stringent now, and so you can't get away with just putting in the defaults which gave the duff results in the early days. So yes, definitely. I think anything pre-2012, when there was a building regs change as well, there have been upgrades in the building regulations over the period. Since they first came out in 2008, there's been several changes. So there are more stringent parameters that have to be met and the conventions, which is giving the improvements in the actual rating, or should give the improvements in the rating or a more accurate rating to the ones that were done early doors.
If I can just continue. So I think one of the points here is often we're just asked to go and kind of have an EPC, and the people who are instructing you think that's kind of the end of it. But if they provide you with more information, so an O&M manual, for instance, would really help with outputs of all the kind of primary heat sources. I think if you, with good information, you can get a much, much better EPC. And rather than just saying, you know, can I have an EPC and going for the lowest possible price, spending that time is going to pay dividends in my experience anyway.
Also, in a lot of the early EPCs, the extent of the demise wasn't always made clear. And so we're going to site now and finding a building that says 20,000 square foot. The EPC, the existing EPC, is for something at 15,000 square foot. Now that could be because there's a mezzanine floor being added over the 10 years, or there's a room missed out in the first one because the original assessor wasn't aware exactly the full extent of the building they were looking at. So, you know, there are various inaccuracies that were inevitable in those early days. So.
Okay. Carl, perhaps I could draw you in now. You've done quite a lot of research recently just in terms of how EPCs are paying out on the national stage. Mm. Do you want to talk us through some of those findings?
Yes. So what we've done is we've looked at all the EPCs that the DCLG has on record for commercial buildings. And some of it isn't very surprising. There are bits in the north of England and in the very south of England that have their issues where in Rydale, for example, 37.5% of commercial space is an FRG. But I think what surprised me was that places like Kensington, Chelsea, and Hammersmith and Fulham have quite a lot of space that's an FRG. And in general, offices are quite polarized as well. So offices in particular are either quite at the high end or at the very bottom end. So I think those were sort of the main things that I drew from that. But what I'm interested in from all of your experiences, I mean, I try quantifying how big of a problem that is, but I mean, from your experience, how big of an issue is this? How many people should be worried?
I think any landlord with any large portfolio needs to have some concern as to the extent of substandard property they will hold, because it will be a serious dent on the rental income come 2018 when they find they can't re-let a building, or 2023 when they can't continue to let a building. But again, it looks looking at different property types. I mean, I think your report concentrated on offices. We found with industrial sheds incidence of F&G rated substandard properties with existing EPCs when re-reviewed has been decreased by up to 40% in some instances. So there is a potential that there is better light out there than you're sort of portraying in the office market. So it really is, you've got to get out there and check what you've got before you start panicking, I think.
Mm. When you look at the numbers year on year, the amount of space that's been rated B or above has dramatically increased, and I guess that's because of stricter building regulations.
Oh, definitely, and so certainly in the city you get office fit outs. Clients are more demanding, they want better lighting, they want better HVAC systems, and that will only help to improve the EPC rating. So as and when the cyclical fit outs come along, there's only going to be enhancements to the EPC.
I think a lot of our clients are also targeting better ratings. I think, you know, people aren't really aiming for just an E. They're aiming for a good quality EPC. Yeah. So it might be a B. I think A is sometimes a little bit too aspirational, and really only for, you know, very exemplary high sustainability buildings, so like BREEAM, excellent kind of category. But most people now, yeah, they're thinking long and hard about this. And when they're doing a major refit, as Phil says, they are going for, you know, LED lights have now come down in price, and they're as cheap, I think, as an LG7 regular fitting. So the kind of the market, the technology is starting to keep up, and as a consequence, these EPCs are starting to improve.
Have you seen much evidence? You mentioned people really being aspirational and trying to go for the higher ratings when they refit. Have you seen much evidence of the link between rental and the higher ratings and good sustainability credentials generally?
Well, I think the map probably speaks volumes there, really. So a couple of the worst affected areas, I'm not quite sure what the average rental value would be in those two areas, but it's going to be a lot less than Hammersmith, Fulham and Chelsea. I think, you know, when we're, you know, I set up our Birmingham office in 2004, having moved out of London, I was staggered how cheap rent was in the Midlands. And I think, you know, Phil covering Cardiff and Bristol, when you look at the rental levels and how much money it costs to refurbish these buildings, spending it wisely and making sure you get a proper return is key. And if you're getting, I don't know, £8.50 a square foot in some of these areas, if it's costing you, you know, £25 a foot for a refit, then the maths really are very stretched, aren't they? So I think that's where we're getting a real strain in these areas where the rental levels are, you know, really, really suppressed.
I suppose just moving on from that then, just thinking about lease renewal and the effect of a good EPC at the lease renewal stage, what sort of bearing is it having on negotiations?
Well, I think it is taking its toll. I mean, I'm involved in a few things where you know, tenants are looking at staying in a building, but have been advised by their agents and others that you know, if they don't get a better EPC, then they are going to be in some difficulty in a few years' time. So they may be disturbed during their occupation. So there, anecdotally at least, there's, you know, a number of cases that I'm involved in where tenants are trying to get landlords to, you know, refurbish the buildings at their cost or to improve the energy efficiency at least. So yeah, there's certainly examples of it within our business, and I dare say also for you too, would you say, Phil?
Oh yeah, definitely. It's not just actually lease renewals, it's lease ends as well, where we're starting to see tenants who have a vague understanding of the MEES trying to fight a little bit harder with the dilapidations claims that are coming their way. It's really is starting to, the knowledge is spreading across both landlord and tenant sectors.
I suppose, for example, if you were a tenant of a building which had a poorly rated EPC, are you starting to see that being used as a negotiating tool just in terms of lease end and so on?
We've had one recently where a client of ours who is the tenant in a building told us that they were not worried about the end of term claim because the building had an F-rated EPC, and they believe the landlord would have to do works that would supersede any of their dilapidations liabilities. We had to put the guy straight, unfortunately for him, on the fact that he has still the obligations to decorate, maintain, repair and things like that. And we also pointed out to him that he'd done such a good job in maintaining the HVAC system that it wasn't in disrepair, it would last another lease, and actually it was probably only the lighting that the landlord had to focus on to get the EPC rating down, so his dilapidations liability would still definitely be there at the end of the term. So it's things like that that tenants need to be looking at and get advice on if they think they have a case to fight a claim.
But if I can just come in on that point, I think that, you know, if you have the contrary where an air conditioning system, let's say, is limping towards the end of its life, and you know, really it's on its knees when the lease comes to an end, there's a certain degree of inevitability that it's going to be replaced with something much more energy efficient, often a completely different system, a different type of system. So we're now seeing, you know, hybrid VRV systems which have come out in the last few years. There are three and four pipe fan coil systems, all of which give much better ratings than some of the other systems. So air conditioning seems to go through different on vogue periods, and I'm not quite sure where it's going next, but definitely the efficiencies are changing. HCFCs are being, you know, phased out and squeezed further and further as time goes on. So supersession claims are rife in my part of the industry. Whether they're right or not, often they're not. But certainly, you know, people are making very strong commercial arguments that, you know, they don't have to repair their systems, or that they have a whopping great big supersession claim at the end. And you can never make such sweeping generalizations. You know, the devil is in the detail. You've got to get to know how whether this equipment is truly in good condition or not. And I think without knowing the facts, it's often difficult to generalize in these situations.
Okay. Chris, one of the things just to touch on, we've talked a little bit about the impact on lease end and dilapidations. Do you want to talk just a little bit about the effect on rent review?
Yes. In terms of rent review, I think there are, you know, a lot of arguments that are likely to come out of this. I think the key one that's likely to come, you know, particularly from tenants where there is a deficient EPC, so an F or a G, where they're going to be arguing that the building has no value because it can't be legally let, or at least sublet, depending on the time of the when the rent review date is. So I think there are going to be some pretty tense arguments and discussions between landlords and tenants surrounding that point. I'm not sure that's right, that, you know, it will have no value, and I think a lot of that's going to kind of have to come out through, you know, arbitrations or through court cases. But there are going to be certainly a lot of, you know, strong commercial discussions around those points. And when we're dealing with a rent review that might be going up, you know, £10 or £20 since the last review on a big building in central London, then those things are going to be, you know, really quite key.
Yeah, I suppose that's an interesting point, just in terms of case law. I mean, can you see that there is going to be a body of case law emerging on some of these points over the next few years? I mean, when could we realistically expect to see something?
Well, cases take, in my experience, anything from a year to 18 months just to even, you know, get in front of a sort of CMC and get anywhere near a court. So we are talking, I'm sure, a good couple of years, maybe 2 or 3 years after 2018, before we're really seeing anything really kind of come out of this. So in the interim, we're going to have, you know, independent experts wrestling over rent reviews and arbitrators trying to decide what the right answer is on these things. And until we get some, you know, settled law, then it's a little bit up in the air.
The responsibility to enforce MEES is with local authorities. What are the fines and the ways in which it can be enforced?
Okay, so local weights and measures, and with local weights and measures, they've got the trading standards and environmental health are the two branches that are most likely under the weights and measures to come out and look at the building and do the assessments. But the enforcement on the commercial side, if there's a failure to comply with MEES, anything up to the 3 month point, there is a potential penalty of £5,000 or a 10% of the rateable value up to a maximum of £50,000. On the domestic side, up to 3 months, it's £2,000. 3 months plus on the commercial side, it can be a £10,000 fine or 20% of the rateable value, up to a ceiling of £150,000. And similarly on the domestic side, it's a flat rate of £4,000. Where false information has been given to place a building on the exemptions register, there is a £5,000 fine for that as well. And where landlord fails to comply with a compliance notice, there is a £5,000 fine with that one as well.
And is your sense that local authorities are geared up to deal with it?
Looking back over the 10 years of EPCs, I haven't ever witnessed or seen a single claim made. I'm sure there must be some cases somewhere, but there hasn't been any enforcement as far as I'm aware. I would love to be corrected on that, but I've never heard of a case ever being brought to the fore. I suspect with this, because it's got more teeth than the old EPCs, there will be some energy there to get it moving.
I think, you know, having the resources to police the entire market is just ridiculous, isn't it? So, you know, you can guarantee there'll be a few sort of trophy hunting expeditions that always go on with these. I think, you know, with any new piece of legislation, they'll be keen to bring the industry into line. So I'm sure there'll be some fairly chunky landlords with some very poor EPCs that they're keen to look at.
Yeah, I agree with that. And there's also the publication penalty as well. So if you've got a large organisation that has a reputation to uphold, they can have themselves named and shamed for not complying with MEES. And I think that may actually bring more to the table than the fines for these larger organisations, definitely. So it doesn't have to be a financial penalty to actually make it stick.
Okay. In terms of where you see MEES developing next, I've heard some suggestion of review potentially within the next 12 months. Do you have any sense of how you see it playing out?
I've also seen some sort of written speculation, evidence or whatever, saying that they'll be looking to make it more stringent by 2025 to a D rating and by 2030 to a C rating. So it certainly looks like it's moving in that direction.
Is that for commercial?
That's commercial. Yeah.
And of course, meeting standing still and meeting an E when there's a certain inevitability of the building regulations are going to change over the next few years. You know, they have in a pretty cyclical basis. So just standing still will be a challenge, let alone, you know, any further sort of stringency that comes into play. So getting a D will be much, much harder than you know, it is right now.
One thing I've heard from a few people is that there's a bit of worry around when the next EPC convention is going to be put in place. So they might think, well, we're in a good position now, but what if the next convention says that, you know, X or Y isn't allowed anymore? Is that something landlords should be worrying about at all?
It's very difficult to second guess what's coming out in the next set of conventions. We're on convention 7 now since they first came out, and within the conventions they're upgrading and they're looking at how to make the data entry more stringent and more accurate. When I first started, you just put the window aperture in. Now you have to put the window, the frame, the amount of timber in the frame, the type of glazing. You have to, you know, it's more stringent in every single aspect of what you're looking at. So in terms of what the next convention comes out with, I really wouldn't want to hazard a guess what they're planning. So landlords shouldn't be worried. You know, they've got to take it and roll with the punches as and when they come, and defend them best they can. So, or react to them as best they can. So.
I think one of the other challenges is when you're trying to get an EPC in a building which doesn't really have any services. So if you're doing a speculative development and you've got a landlord's Cat A with literally nothing in it, so the assessor has to make a whole bunch of assumptions, and you're really relying upon what evidence is put in front of him. So he's got a basic shell. I think, as I understand it, Phil, they've got to go for the just builder regulations compliance.
It's so the most energy intensive fit out in accordance with Part L. Yeah.
So you could very well have, say, I used the word duff earlier, but you could certainly have curious outputs from that. So I think quite a lot of planning around how you're going to deal with EPCs when you're approaching speculative developments and lining up tenants to come in with their Cat B fit out, I think is also attention that landlords need to be mindful of. A lot of them are already. They're certainly coming to us to talk to us about how we can best mitigate against that.
That's great. Well, thank you very much for an engaging discussion. That was Phil White, partner who runs the ENS team at Malkin Hollis, and Chris Sullivan, partner who runs the dispute resolution team, again at Malkin Hollis, with Carl Tomusk and Sarah Jackman of EG. Thank you.